Our first reading this morning is from the book The Rights of Man by Thomas Paine. He wrote this in 1791. Paine, you may remember, was a hero of the American Revolution and a pioneer of devout religious skepticism. He also wrote in the language of his day, which took the universal and cast it in male terms. We have a different way of understanding things today, but I will keep his language the same. Use your translating caps, of which I know all of you have. I love the person that can smile in trouble, that can gather strength from distress and grow brave by reflection. 'Tis the business of little minds to shrink. But he whose heart is firm and whose conscience approves his conduct will pursue his principles unto death.
The second reading this morning is taken from the autobiography of Karen Armstrong, an historian of religion. And this has special meaning because it's a book that Joe and I really share a love for. Religion is not about accepting 20 impossible propositions before breakfast, but about doing things that change you. It is a moral, ascetic, and an ethical alchemy. The myths and laws of religion are not true because they conform to some metaphysical, scientific, or historical reality, but because they are life-enhancing.
Wow. Let's start there. I can't help but think that some of you remember me when I was about this tall. And now here I am. Some of you remember me buzzing through the old halls of worship. I remember playing with a little marble playset. You put the marble in and then slide, plink. Slide, plink, it's still there. I remember playing in a tree house that was just for us. I'd crawl in and out, jump up and down. I remember. And so here we are. And I am so nervous. When Mark told me that I would be given the opportunity to preach, I responded quite eloquently. What could I say? What should I say? I stressed long and hard about what the perfect sermon would be. I went to Eric with the grand plan of giving the greatest sermon that has ever been given. Luckily, Eric replied, Joe, not that you don't have a lot to say, but you have a story to tell here. It is your story. Maybe you should start there. Sweet. There's nothing I am more qualified to talk about than this man. So I'm coming to you guys today with my story. I'm telling it because very soon I will be asking for your endorsement as a UU minister. I'd like to be known by you before I ask. With that in mind, I'd like to start with my first religious experience. When I was young, we had a pet guinea pig. His name was Squirmy. Adorable little thing, furry and brown. We used to take him into the bathroom with us while we played and took baths. That was normal. One night, my brother took him into the bathroom with him. I heard a scream from the bathroom, and that was not normal. It was the first time I had heard pain, heard anguish. Squirmy had drowned. My brother was crying, my mother was comforting, and I picked him up and took him into my mother's room. I laid him on the bed and did chest compressions and mouth to mouth. I had never prayed before. I don't remember ever having asked God for anything. I begged God that day. I told God that I would do anything, anything, if He would give us our precious Squirmy back. God did not give us Squirmy back. We buried him in a box in our backyard. I hated God. I had begged, I had pleaded. And God was absent. I remember looking at the sky that day with tears in my eyes and rejecting God. I became an atheist that day. As I grew older, my increasingly rational mind wanted to be able to say more than just, I reject God because God hurt me. So during my high school years, I became a qualified atheist. There were several reasons for this. Perhaps the most important was that my father was a non-believer. I've always idolized my father. Some of my favorite adolescent moments are when we would talk about the silliness of a Christian God. I strove to please my father with logical arguments that disproved this God, and he always seemed so passionate when he taught me new ones. Notice the scope of our rejection. Christian God. Another reason I became such an ardent professor of atheism is that it annoyed many of the people in my high school. Oh, and did I mention that I love to argue? A match made in a heaven that I didn't believe in. Let me summarize my reasons for being an atheist thus far. Father veneration. It annoyed people. I love to argue. If I'm honest up here, all this may have had something to do with needing some attention. But I think there was another reason for my atheism. I loved religion. This may sound counterintuitive, but stick with me. As an atheist, I was allowed to be critical and evaluative of religions and religion. I had the freedom to speculate and examine without all the suppositions and assumptions that a religious person might begin with. As an atheist, I was able to marvel at the beauties and oddities of religion, and much to my surprise, I fell deeply in love with it. The process I have just described took a little while, though. I still have a lot of growing up to do. When I look back at my adolescence, I sometimes smile at the things that I did and the things that I valued. And sometimes I'm ashamed. What motivated me at the time was gaining social power and being perceived as right. In hindsight, I think my actions revealed a somewhat narcissistic young man. I thought that I could make people do things, think things, and believe things, and that made me happy. Perhaps I could have stayed that way, a happily self-centered little manipulator, if not for a few bad breakup experiences. The next part of my story stars my first love. We were both 17 when she got pregnant, and that was a problem. In my own mind, I had always been the golden boy. I wanted to be an example that my mother could take home to her family and say, "See, I didn't screw up." I was going to go to college, have a career, make lots of money, and do everything right. I told my mom about the pregnancy, and she cried. I didn't tell my father for a very long time. Reacting out of fear, I asked her to get an abortion, and she declined. I had no choice but to own up to my responsibilities as a father. Life would be tough, but we would make it. I began to want this child more than anything I've ever wanted before. She had a miscarriage about 3 months in. To help me grieve, my friends built a little wooden boat. We placed a yellow duck toy in it, and we burned it in a pool. I have a yellow duck tattooed on my chest, over my heart. I feel that that child sacrificed itself for us. The tattoo reminds me of that sacrifice and my responsibility to it. The pregnancy miscarriage kept us together for a while, but then the relationship got bad again and we broke up. The amount of emotion that this caused in me was terrible and overwhelming. I'd never felt anything like it, and I didn't know how to handle it. I began to cut myself. I believed that I could trade one kind of pain for another. And for a while, I was right. But each time, it brought less relief. It also brought me a new problem: shame. Shame when others saw the scabs. Shame when I had to explain them. And shame that I knew that I could not control my emotions or myself. I would like to say that I learned from this experience. I didn't. I started dating another girl. In the end, I tried to do the exact same thing to keep her with me. However, there was one key difference with this relationship. I learned from it. In the months that followed, I started to work seriously on finding out what I believed and what mattered in my life. Throughout these relationships, I had failed to appreciate the feelings of these women. And more importantly, I deliberately tried to hurt them. This led me to another crucial realization. The pain that I felt was, in some way, deserved. In this moment, this beautiful moment, I knew that my actions had consequences. I was developing a conscience. It could not have come at a better time. Our relationship ended during my sophomore year of college. I was struggling academically for the first time. I was also struggling to find meaning in what I was doing. And that was all new. One day in the middle of a physics lecture, I got up and walked out. I couldn't do it anymore. Something had been telling me that this was not my path for a long time. As I walked in a sort of horrified haze of uncertainty, I asked myself what was important to me. The first thought that entered into my mind was helping people. This thought moved me deeply. I decided on a new major, psychology. I had been helped previously by psychologists, and it seemed a practical application of my skills. It also gave my life a purpose and meaning that it did not have before. I also began to volunteer for the suicide prevention hotline. For 2 years, every Friday at 12:01 a.m., I would begin a six-hour shift at North Central Mental Health. This experience taught me many valuable lessons. It taught me how to pour compassion into my voice, to make it resonate over a phone line, and how to be present with a person in a highly stressful situation. I learned to listen attentively, to hear emotions and anxieties. I also learned that I cannot help everyone. Over countless phone calls, one subject came up continually and unexpectedly: religion. At first, I was reluctant to engage in this kind of conversation. However, over time, I discovered that not only was I able to have these sorts of conversations, but that they were an important and effective tool for walking people back from the edge. Religion became a place where I could connect with a caller and reestablish their link with their own self-worth. I would like to say that I saved people. I now realize that these stories, these people, their plights and anguish, their hopes and dreams, were changing me, teaching me, and developing my understanding of what it is to be human. They were saving me. Something inside my own heart was building. I was becoming more spiritual. This came to a climax one day when I was delivering pizzas. I was musing about karma and theology when a small warmth began in my shoulders. It spread through my entire body. It grew to a feeling that I can only describe as indescribable. It was total and the greatest gift I have ever been given. I had to pull over. It was so intense. One thought entered into my mind: intent. It was both loud and soft, accusatory and consoling, beautiful and terrible. And that, my friends, is my conversion experience. I wanted something from God with squirmy, and I didn't get it. I didn't want anything from God, and I got something profound. In that moment, some part of the divine became evident in my life. I didn't deserve it, and I still don't. But for whatever reason, it happened, and my life changed. I started going back to the church of my childhood, here. I began to teach Sunday school classes, OWL and Coming of Age. It is rewarding in ways that I would never have imagined. Do you want to hear new and profound ways of understanding the world? Try asking our youth what they believe. You may find yourself surprised. I know I was, and I still am. And this brings me to a special story, and that's the moment of my call. One day, sitting in the back row of this church, I considered what I wanted to do after college. What kind of psychologist did I want to be? Where would I go to school? Could I leave my friends and family? What was I going to do with my life? I looked up at this pulpit and mused. I could do that. I could be up there preaching. I rejected that idea immediately. You see, my mother had told me at a very young age that someday I would be a minister. The irony of my many years of atheism, coupled with the absurdity of my mother ever being right, caused me to want to laugh out loud too. And I might have, if I hadn't almost emptied the contents of my stomach onto the parishioner in front of me. Yes, someone in this congregation was this close to wearing my breakfast. My rejection of ministry caused a visceral reaction of my body. My rejection felt wrong on a level that I had never felt before. I have come to understand this is my moment of calling. And at the time, it terrified me. It was my call. And so in some strange way, it was decided that I would go into ministry. The terrifying thing for me was that I did not feel in any way worthy of this call. I knew that I had not experienced enough in my own life or had lived into my own beliefs long enough to presuppose that I could preach to anyone. With my work on the suicide hotline, my RE work, and other volunteer experiences, service as a concept had grown deep roots within me And I didn't think that I had performed enough of it to provide anybody any hope or anything like that to be a minister. I have a memory of my father talking about the Peace Corps. I don't remember the context, but my father had said that he had always wanted to join the Peace Corps. He had even filled out an application. I would join the Peace Corps. I would do something that my father had always wanted to do. In 2007, I became a volunteer for the United States Peace Corps in Ghana. After training, I was placed in Porchapur, an extremely rural village with no running water and no electricity. When I got on the plane to leave, I had never felt so alone in my entire life. I remember looking back at the people that had come to see me off and smiling with tears in my eyes and then walking away. In the village, I didn't have access to all the amenities I take for granted here. If I needed water, I would take buckets to the water hole. If I needed groceries, it was a 45-minute bike ride to Benache. If I needed money, it was an all-day commute to Nkwanta on a dirt road and a crowded van. Thank goodness for it. I don't think I ever understood how good I have it here. For nothing other than luck, I am white, middle class, American, male, heterosexual, and well-educated. The benefits I receive from these descriptions are so undeserved as to be close to criminal. I am still coming to grips with the perspectives I gained from my experience, but I try hard every day to be thankful for what I have. Thankfulness is just one of many things I learned in the Ghanaian bush. I learned how to organize communities in a multicultural setting. I learned how to coordinate resources, write grants, and develop programs and events centered on education and development. I have taught in multilingual schools, established moringa farms, and participated in customs and practices of a non-native culture. I'm a much more dynamic person now than I was then. And not a day goes by that I don't miss who I was in Ghana. Does moringa ring a bell for anybody in this church? About 6 years ago, I wrote asking for money for a fairly audacious moringa growing project. Moringa is a fast-growing tree. Its leaves are like a multivitamin with protein. Protein is pretty important where I was. Our church sent about $200, which I used to purchase the seeds. Over the life of the project, we planted over 10,000 trees. Through the money given by this church, food has been grown and people have been nourished. I'm not the only one that thanks you for that support, so thank you. I came back from the Peace Corps ready to move on with my plans for ministry. I went directly into seminary. I began with two emotions, wonder and anxiety. Wonder that I would finally be able to learn all the things that I cared about. And anxiety because I was attending a Christian seminary, and I am not a Christian. Experiences proved my anxieties to be exaggerated. Not only did I find my ideas and beliefs to be, for the most part, accepted, they were also encouraged and engaged by my colleagues and peers. Also during my seminary experience, I added three titles to my name. The first is husband. I got married. My wife's name is Courtney, and I love her dearly. The second is Sifu. Sifu is the proper title of an instructor in the Shaolin Do system. I've been a martial artist for 10 years, and I'm currently the assistant instructor at a school in Hilliard. I also became a father. On August 24th, 2011, Courtney gave birth to Apollo Braden Pierce. He's simply amazing. The first time I held him is probably the most proud I have ever been. Every day he surprises me, and to hear him laugh puts a giant smile on my face. And this brings me to where I am now. I'm in my last semester of seminary. Four classes to go, and I walk with a Master of Divinity, which is a pretty cool title if you ask me. In 1 week, I will have completed a unit of clinical pastoral education at Nationwide Children's Hospital. I'm also serving on our pastoral team, our pastoral care team, and doing my field education requirements with this congregation. My time as a chaplain at the hospital has been truly formative for me and given a new direction to my call. I went into my training as a chaplain believing that I was already good at being at providing pastoral care, and I had very little to learn. I'm trying to think of a good way to describe that. Some Greek word. Hubris. That's what that was, hubris. My time at Children's Hospital has left me feeling exposed, vulnerable, and humbled, which is the exact foundation I now believe necessary to build up a chaplain. I was once asked what I thought it took to be a good chaplain. I replied that it was the ability to put the events of life into a spiritual context and relieve spiritual angst. And surely that's part of it. But now I understand that to be a chaplain, to provide meaningful pastoral care, requires the willingness to be truly present with another human being and the strength to let your heart break over and over again. I have come to find out that I am a chaplain, and it is my place to be present in the midst of crisis. Over time and with many experiences, I believe I have become able to be a spiritual resource to people in crisis and to be a spiritual leader in my community. I tested the waters with a suicide hotline. I immersed myself with the Peace Corps, and I learned how to swim at Children's Hospital. So what's next? The call to service has become ingrained in me, and I have decided to become a chaplain in the United States Army. I find it deeply meaningful to be a spiritual resource to people whose mortality and lethality are constantly in play. I know that I can be relevant in that theater and that ethos. It's those men and women who serve, so I will seek active duty as soon as it is available to me. Many in this congregation and our denomination are apprehensive about the military, its history, and its current use in the world. Me too. But I ask of you, how does one change the way our military operates? It takes two things, outside pressure and inside pressure. Who speaks to the inherent worth and dignity of all people on the inside? Who raises the voice of justice, equity, and compassion in a three-part harmony? Chaplains do. And I wish there were 1,000 more Unitarian Universalist chaplains in the military. Even one more makes a difference. In summation, I want to say that my heart truly wants to comfort people. I have built my life around it. I believe that the position of chaplain is unique in that it has the possibility of offering a powerful spiritual outlet to those that desperately need it. Chaplains can be healing and restorative in a way that no one else can be. Chaplains can also speak truth to power in a way that no other profession can. I've come to the conclusion that my call is to be a chaplain in the Army, and I will fulfill that call to the best of my abilities. I'd like to say thanks to an awful lot of people. My mother, my father, and my grandfather, who are all here. My little boy, who's probably causing a ruckus in the quiet room. I'd like to thank Dick Dawson for journeying in this place with me, because if it hadn't been for his support and constantly pulling me along, I wouldn't be up here today. I'd like to thank, you know, the kids in my OWL classes and coming of age for teaching me so much. I'd like to thank the teachers for allowing me to engage the students and being with me every day when we were doing the work. And finally, I would like to say that I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me. If all goes as planned, I will ship off to basic training in June. I will not be going alone. I will take the love of my friends and my family. I will take all the experiences that have made me who I am now. And I will be taking all of you with me. And I am deeply appreciative of the love that I have received from this community from the time that I was this tall to when I'm this tall. Thank you all so much.